You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Scottish Football Forums podcast. We're at season 13, episode 53. I'm John, and tonight from the Lars, we have Charlie. How you doing?
All right, mate, yourself?
Aye, all good. Aye, good for a Monday night. We also have Josh. How are you?
I'm a lot better than I was 45 minutes ago, John, when I read that fake article about Scott McTominay being out for the rest of the season.
I know. I thought you were going to be getting a call-up soon at this rate, but seems to be...
Like, mate, honestly, I was a ball hair away from taking my boots with me to Germany.
Aye, I don't mind that desperate, to be fair. Laurie, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. And I mean, my prediction last week on the pod about Kelly beating Hearts didn't come true, but I'm not too bothered.
Aye, I mean, you thought that Stephen A. Smith was going to do your return, didn't you?
Yeah, I didn't think he was going to do the turn, but he didn't, although I do have a, I know it's not the focus of the podcast tonight, but I do have a little bone to pick with Naysie. He called Saturday's game a free hit for Kelly. It certainly wasn't a free hit.
Aye. Talking. So I used to have an athletes on the podcast. We've got a couple of Olympic sprinters on tonight. Steve Conroy and Des Roach, how you doing?
Nice. I've been called a lot worse.
Aye. Quite a Welsh comments at the weekend. I mean, to be fair, Des, you used to be a runner.
I was a runner, yeah. That was my job a number of years ago. But my knees are now paying for it and my ankles are now paying for it. So,
two knee joints ago.
So Steve and Des are from Behind the Whistles podcast. We're glad to have them on. And also we have James, who's the Behind the Whistles. How are you doing?
Oh, very well, John. Thank you for having us on.
Aye, no pleasure. It's going to be fun tonight. A good few of us on. So we'll get started first of all and ask, how did you get about, whose idea was it to get going?
So it started born off a conversation between Des and I. Des and Steve were already doing a podcast called Get Involved Refereeing, but it was quite infrequent and they wanted to do something on a more frequent basis. That was kind of like a paid studio arrangement. It's quite expensive operation to actually run. So they were looking for somebody to come on as a third member to set up something where we could do it weekly and review the games each week. And I worked with Desi's wife, and he phoned me and said, can you tell me what me and Steve would need to record ourselves? And I got a call back about 50 minutes later asking me if I just would want to come on and do the tech and work with them. And I was actually in the middle of a talks to join a golf podcast because I'm golf daft. And I was just about to take up a guy in Northern Ireland's offer to do that. And when Des made that call, and I'm football daft. My own background, I'm a bit in football myself. And it felt right. So just decided to go for it. And that was 8 weeks ago. And things have just been moving really, really fast. And we expected it to be because VAR's such a hot topic and we speak a lot about it. That was really the beginning of losing my Sundays.
I remember when they said about VAR coming in that we'd stop all the like hot debates in the pub and all that. It's ended up worse, hasn't it?
No, it's not been what was advertised. No, I don't think anybody could have foreseen quite what a monstrous thing that they've let loose. Theoretically, it should be just a damn simple thing, VAR, but it's trust the SFA. It's been anything but.
I mean, do you think part of it is down to the fact that you've got a budget version of it, or is it just people that are operating it in the correct way?
Both.
All of that. Yeah. All of that.
Thanks. Both, aye.
If you want to cover off issues with VAR, I think that might be a good starting point. Because there are a couple of things with VAR that are a real problem and shouldn't be happening. We're seeing frequent occurrences where more experienced referees are put onto the VAR, and they're more, I don't like using the word junior, it's lesser experienced counterparts that are category ones on the field. And the more experienced referee on VAR's calling over the less experienced on the field and offering them an opinion. And that's making it very difficult for the less experienced referee not to go with his more senior counterpart's opinion, because they are the more experienced. So they're giving them a recommendation of something they should do. It puts them in a very difficult spot. That shouldn't be happening. A referee on the park is a manager on the field. The guys have continually said that. They should be the ones making the decision. They shouldn't be put in that situation where someone's saying, here's my opinion, come with me, and making it very difficult for them to say no. And the other thing we've seen is at times referees waiting for VAR to, they don't want to make a decision themselves. They've left it for VAR to make a decision for them. That's a re-refereeing as well. Those two things shouldn't be happening. That's not what VAR is for.
The theory behind VAR, though, is a good one. You can't argue with that. To correct clear and obvious errors. But off the top of my head, when was the last time that we cleared up a clear and obvious error on VAR? Every week, it's somebody else's opinion taken over from the team in the middle. And that's just not what it's for. It was to instantly correct something that everybody knows was wrong and the ref just misinterpreted it. It's not, it's grown arms and legs, and probably the less we talk about arms, the better. But we know that's going to come up.
I think if we look at the way VAR has been introduced, it came in midway through a season after 12 games, and then it was then implemented. It's been nothing but a mitigating disaster within Scottish football. You can't really, nobody can we trust it. It's all got to go back to, how's the education been given? How's the training been given? How's the interpretation been given? It's wrong. I don't think anybody can deny. It's absolutely denied the fans' experience. And the on-field referee should have the absolute control. If it's an opinion, opinions can be wrong. If it's factual, then you've got to go down the factual route. And if it's fact, then you deal with it. Opinions should not come into it regarding VAR, because if you have an opinion and you're overruling a referee, then you're re-refereeing the game.
Absolutely.
Sorry to interrupt. Charlie, do you have a question there?
And it's interesting to hear like referees' points of view on VAR, because I think as a fan, like, the prime example I have of VAR getting, like, ruining, because I think VAR's ruining the fan experience. I think the top one for me was at Hampden in November when Martin Boyle scored, which looked like in the stand a perfectly onside goal, and you've got about 6 or 7 minutes waiting to find out it was offside by his fingernail or whatever it was. But I guess the question I have for you guys is, do you think that they missed a step in not making the refs full-time before they brought VAR in?
No. We've had that discussion. We will never ever have full time referees up here. There just isn't the money, and we would all love it. But you know, we are. I used to be the secretary of the Referees Association, the SSFRA. I've sat in on meetings with Doncaster and the like, and obviously they're politicians, so you take what they say with a salt. But they pretty much said that they were skint. There is no money up here, other than, you know, Celtic Rangers, whatever. But there is no money to find full-time referees. And much as we would love it, it just isn't going to happen.
So the thing is, Charlie, a lot of our referees are, you know, the lawyers and the doctors and the headmasters. They're on really good money. So to try and convince them to leave that and on good pensions to pay for that, they're then asking clubs to sacrifice on their TV and prize pot. They're not willing to do that. They've already made the sacrifice on VAR. So to add full-time referees into that, the clubs are just never going to agree on such things. It'd be brilliant to have full-time committed referees, but it's not going to happen. And as a discussion that comes up every 5-10 years, and when it gets to talk to money again, it just goes nowhere.
And it just won't.
You're often on that kind of subject around that area that comes up a lot is the subject of ex-players becoming referees. I mean, I know from watching the West of Scotland Football League that certainly Sean Murdoch's one that's admired in terms of the game, in terms of the way that he speaks to players and seems to be someone that I think will develop, whether it's because he's an ex-player or just that he's a good official. He seems to speak to the players and they seem to respect him. What's your kind of thoughts on that? Do you think having more ex-players involved is a good thing or not?
Des, you actually covered something. Yeah, you talk about this quite well, about personality. It's quite an important thing. I think we spoke about this recently. I think it'd be good for you to pick that one up.
Yeah, I think that ex-players would be absolutely fabulous to have within the refereeing fraternity, because we keep hearing about people saying, and I'll quote Neil Cann at the weekend regarding the Aberdeen Motherwell red card, if you've not played the game, you don't know. I'm sorry. Has Neil McCann sat a loss of the game test? Sean Murdoch is the absolute pinnacle of, I've played the game, I'm now refereeing, I know the laws of the game, I know how it's going. Is Sean going to get every decision right? Of course he won't. Of course he won't. He'll make errors. However, that's what we need. We need ex-players to come on board, learn the laws of the game. Is it going to make him the best referee in the world? I don't know. Probably not. But James Sweeney, would he go and learn laws of the game? Would it make him the best referee in the world? Don't know. But you've got to have people who are informed. You've got to have people who are educated within the laws of the game to know how you manage that game. But it's not just the laws of the game that you need to know. You need to know how to manage 22 players on a pitch and have a rapport with them, have a semblance of connectivity with them. That's the biggest thing for me. It's man management. Everybody knows the laws of the game when you've passed your referees test, but you need to know how to man manage players on that pitch for that moment in time. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to think that Sean Murdoch, given his background, and I've watched him a few times, and I think Sean's a very good referee, I would like to think that he would be able to install that within his in-game management.
See, on the back of that end, Des, how did you manage to build a rapport with the players? As a referee, what did you find worked?
Just by being normal, by being having a chat with them and walking by players and saying, oh, that was a wee bit silly there. Just don't be aloof. Just have a relationship with them. And I'd like to think that most players, if they look back at me, they would say that Des spoke to me. Just speak to players. Just have time for them and have, okay, if you're going to have to caution them and say, right, you know why that's happening. I've had numerous conversations with players and said, good, Phil, no problem at all. I think it's just been personable.
Yep.
That'd be the same for yourself as well, Steve. What approach did you kind of tend to take?
No, it's the same approach. I never took myself too seriously. I don't think, and I hope I never have been aloof or arrogant or whatever. But in my line of work, being medical, then part of my job is to talk to people and to try and get as much of a rapport and try and get as much contact as you can do with the people that you're in touch with. So I never ever took myself too seriously. I was never po-faced. I think I know Des was as well. You see a lot of the guys now, and it really does look as though they're school teachers. No offence, Des. But I was always, always perfectly happy to take a mouthful from somebody, so long as they were okay and taking a mouthful back for me. And so long as you behave like adults, we could have roaring, and nobody would know about it, you could have roaring arguments with people on a pitch or afterwards. but you behave like adults and you keep it to yourself. It's you know, it's not rocket science. It's not, you know, we're not creating anything drastic here. It's just absolute common sense.
Mutual respect, isn't it, Steve? It's mutual respect works for everything. Works well when it's with mutual respect. And I think if you go to a referee and you go on that part and just lord it over everybody, then you're not going to get the respect. But at the same time, from a referee's point of view, they expect the players, when they're being spoken to shut up and listen to what's been said to them. They've got to show their part on that as well. I didn't agree with Stuart Kettlewell's approach the other day, post-match. We had issues with Mr. Napier's performance and comments made to his players. I think it'd be better to have done that privately in a complaint rather than go to the press after a big decision. I don't think it's ever a good look after a big decision goes against your team where you start making allegations about things being said to the press rather than a private complaint. I thought it was distasteful, but I've also seen the video and that incident of five or six of his players charging towards a referee and one of them being very aggressive, and don't like to see that either. That's not showing respect to the referee.
I'll tell you, I've got two stories, right, about how I try to engage with players, right? And you can edit this, you can do what you want with it. So I was at a Brechin versus Stranraer, right? Current Stranraer manager, Stevie Agnew. And Stevie and I have had a few laughs at this. It was 2-1. Stranraer, a goal down, and Stevie put the ball down for a free kick, and I said, if you put, it was like 89th minute or something, I said, if you stick that in the top bin, I'll give you my match fee. And what did he do? he stuck it in the top bin, and he's running away, and I'm like, oh my god. And then I bet him a couple of weeks later, he's like, so what's your match fee? I went, Nah, I'm not getting you that. And I've got to say, I didn't pay him. I didn't pay him because I thought that'd be unworth. But the other one was, it was Stirling Albion against somebody. And the captain for Stirling Albion, forgive me, I can't remember his name, but he's in for a challenge. And it was a nothing challenge. But the crowd were going absolute tonto on it. So I pulled him in and he's like, for other words, for goodness sake, he's like, there's nothing in that. There's nothing in that. I went, it's Saturday night. I'm having a curry. What are you getting? And he's looking at me. I said, so don't you challenge like that way ever again, because everybody's expecting me to be giving you a hard time. I said, but I'm going for a chicken curry with extra onions. And he just looked at me and he's walked away. And then he came back to me and he went, you just totally defused that situation, didn't you? I went, aye, because nobody expects it in there. That's managing the game within the game. And do you know what? See, every game I had Stirling Albion after it, not a problem. He kept his team intact and went, don't give him any grief.
Not something that we hear of, really.
See, just on that, guys, I'm quite interested to ask you. You talked a wee bit about there about building a rapport with the players on the pitch, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. And you know, you said there, Steve, about some of the guys nowadays look a bit like school teachers when they're on the pitch. I think probably part of that's to do with the second they crack a smile, they're on every single forum, you know, for the next 2 weeks. All sorts of threads about what pubs they drink in and what schools they went to and all that. but what I was going to ask you was, what's your experience around players who are difficult to deal with? And I think you touched on it there, Des, around players that are aggressive towards a referee and don't want to have that mutual respect. How do you deal with that when you're on the pitch?
I have to say, for me, I never really had any bother. I'm honest, and that's not a cop-out or anything. I really didn't. So maybe my approach worked. The only one, and I've said this before, the only one that sticks out, and I don't know if I'm allowed to use words like arsehole and things like that, was Stephen Stephen Tosh when he was down at Gretna. He was an arse, just an absolute. He's the only one that I remember thinking, and again with Desi's, you know, different choice of words. The only one I remember thinking, my word, you seem like an awfully unpleasant young man. He's really the only guy that springs to mind. He was one that used to do, you know, the comedy Man United thing where they would crowd round you, and somebody at the back would bump into somebody, and he bumped into somebody. He was coming off, he was getting subbed down at Queen of the South or something, and he did that, but it was only the sub that was coming on, and he bumped into him and bumped into me, and even his pal went, what the fuck are you doing? But that's the only story that springs to mind. So I never had a problem.
That's pretty impressive considering some of the games you officiated at as well.
Well, Celtic Rangers, Scottish Cup finals. No, honestly, never had a problem.
Laurie, you wanted to come in?
Yeah. So we were just back on what we were saying a few minutes ago about Stuart Kettlewell's comments. About, you would rather a manager, said those things privately rather than, spilling out, into the press or whatever. In your experience for both of you as refs, how did you find it if a manager, a coach, or even a player had the courage to actually chat to the door? Because I imagine some referees are more forthcoming than others in that regard. Albeit managers do come charging up to you full time these days, which creates its own problems.
Laurie, I've always said that I don't mind a manager having an opinion. That's absolutely fine. However, don't do it in public. If you want to have a conversation with me, if you want to have a go at me, let's do it in private. Let's do it within the dressing room. Let's have that. You do not need to agree with me. We can agree to disagree, but don't do it in a public forum. If you're walking off a pitch and a manager is walking up to you, what's going to happen? There's only two things going to happen. One, everybody in the world sees that he's disagreeing with you. He's not coming up to shake your hand and say, good game. And potentially he's going to get ordered off. So do you know what? Keep your counsel. Let's do it in the dressing room. We can have a private discussion. We do not need to agree, but nobody's going to come out the worst from it. And I'm sure Steve would agree with that.
I never had a problem with people coming in to the changing room afterwards. I would always say, go away, have a cup of tea, 15 minutes, come back and we'll have a chat. But I have to say, I wouldn't, and we were counselled so many times as refs not to say anything immediately after a game, when the dander's up and all the rest of it. So I'm hardly surprised sometimes that stupid comments are made right after a game when somebody shoves a microphone right under their nose where they haven't had a time to think about it or calm down. It must be. I think that's pretty unfair. But I didn't have a problem with anybody coming to speak to me afterwards. Same as you say, Des, I'm perfectly fine to somebody come and state their case. And if I agree or don't, then fine, but behave like adults. But I was never ever afraid to say to somebody, if I've made an arse of that, then I'll get back in touch with you. I never had an issue with that.
I think that's an important point you made about that 115 minutes and a cup of tea, because football's a game of passion and football managers are passionate people. 3 points is a life. So if you're willing to have a discussion with them by diffusing that initial period, by saying, yeah, I'll give you some time, but you give me 15 minutes, you know that they're going to diffuse after that 15 minutes from that immediate point where they walked off the park and get something they want to talk to you about. That 15 minutes settles them down. They've got time to reflect and their approach changes for that discussion to happen. It's a really important skill that to use. I think, having spoken to you and Des quite a lot about this, that's something you appreciate, that the people that are involved in the game, they're really passionate about the game, and sometimes they will say things on the cusp of the moment that they later regret. We talk about that frequently, don't we? So to have that period where you say, yeah, I'll give you my time, but I'll be 15 minutes. Let me get. It's a very tactical thing to say. What I'm saying to you is, you go and cool down, and then we'll have a rational conversation.
It's a bit like fans. Like, how many times, like Charlie, Josh, Laurie, or any of us, after a game, straight after a game on social media, we've come out with something, and then the next day we look back and we go, "What on earth are we talking about?" Because we actually maybe look back at a controversial decision and actually see that, right, okay, we were in the wrong. It was in the heat of the moment. You're angry and you want to take out with anything, Laurie.
Yeah, I can think of a particularly stupid one, maybe one you remember, and the referees got this one right, and I was stupid enough to go on social media about this straight away. It was last season, maybe just before the split, probably just over a year ago. Danny Armstrong got sent off for elbowing Borna Barisic, and actually, when you watch the replay, it's as clear as day. But from where I was sitting, you know, on the wheelchair platform at Rugby Park, I thought I had a decent view, and it looked as if they didn't even touch each other. But then when you watch the replay on Sky, on the Sky footage, you can see it dead clear. And the thing is, I put out a tweet at the time, and it just I got flagged off my own fan, rightly so. But what was I actually quote tweeted it and had the Sky replay, and on said replay, you can actually see me moaning about it. So we've all done it.
Uh-huh. We it's an important part of actually what we do, because fans will react, and a lot of times they're reacting to a decision that referees made at a game, but they don't really know that the referee's actually been right in their decision, because it's something to do with a particular law. I'll give you an example of that. Rangers and Hibernian, encroachment to penalty. Because encroachment includes the arc line, so the D or the box. So there's two Hibs players standing in that. Scott Wright is encroaching in the box. Scott Wright follows into the box, puts the ball in the net, and Rangers fans are complaining why there's no retake for encroachment because there's two Hibs in the arc line. But then when you go into the law, you've got to have a material impact. It's not just encroaching, it's those that have then having a material impact on the result of the kick. So Scott Wright had a material impact, but the two Hibs players in the arc didn't. So therefore, there is no retake. So when we explain that by pointing out the wording in the IFAB, suddenly you've seen the Rangers fans going, "All right, I'm not angry anymore at the referee. You've explained it. That if that's what the law says, I can understand that now." That's an information gap. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to explain when people are getting frustrated at something, try to explain if the referee's been right and why he was right, and point them to why he was right. And when he's wrong, we'll just tell them flat out they're wrong. We've not shied away from criticising current referees when they've got something horribly wrong. And that's the balance. So it's a mix of the two of those. It's being critical at the right times, but pointing out when people are being wrongfully critical, because the referee's just applying the correct law. It's just that's not been explained to fans in details. We don't expect football fans to know the IFAB. It's 84 pages in a PDF file long. It's still one of the longest, most long-winded documents. Nobody's going to sit and read that unless you're studying for a refereeing exam. So there are things in there that we can cover. We're always approachable on X when people can come and ask us a question. People send us videos of clips and say, "What do you think of this?" Or they'll say, "Is this what the referee done here, right or wrong?" And we take that away, have a discussion about it and respond. And I think we might have responded to every single tweet that someone sent us. We've taken the time out to respond because the engagement part's massive for us. And it's being able to offer some information that's not currently with fans, so that they can learn as well. And the IFABs are the pinned tweet on our account, so we put them there deliberately so that if anybody wants to go and check a law anytime, they can just jump on the pinned tweet on the website. They'll see the full IFAB. They can go and search that by a word and find something that they want to look for and do research for themselves. I'm starting to get an education 7-8 weeks down the line because I'm picking up from these two guys all the time, and I'm doing research for the podcast all the time. So I'm learning about laws when people are asking questions. I'm going to research. So I'm building up more knowledge base on it as well. And it's actually quite enjoyable. It actually enhances my viewpoint from being a fan watching a football match, because I understand what the referee's doing. or understand what I think he's seen, but he's getting wrong because he hasn't considered another aspect. So begin to watch football differently. So I encourage MD to go and dig deeper with it. When you see a decision in a match day, come and speak to us. But at the same time, go and have a look at IFAB and see for yourself what it might say that'll help you out.
I know, like I'm speaking before the podcast, and we were talking about the fact that you guys are coming in with what fans would like to see from referees in the game, but it's not going to happen. So you're filling that knowledge gap for us to like go after the game, right? Okay, we didn't like that decision, but can you make sense of why that decision was made? Which obviously you can, because you guys know the rules and laws of the game better than what we do as fans. And probably, I think, as you touched on it earlier, Neil McCann, he's not going to know every single law of the game. Do the players and managers prior to the season starting get like kind of full updates from maybe referees within the game of any changes, or is it just expected that they should know what the current rules are? Because there's obviously things are changing.
Yeah, so the IFAB meet pretty much every year and have a busman's holiday on expenses. This year they were in Gleneagles, I think it was, guys. So they get together, and this is a major gripe for Steve. So this is why I'm speaking rather than Steve, because Steve will take up the rest of the hour talking about IFAB meeting up, because he'll tell you they've got no reason to meet up. But they'll effectively get together and change the laws for the coming season, and that will get fed down through the associations. And then it's at their mercy as to how the association then sends that information out to the clubs. It's probably just done in an email. There won't be any meet-up sessions or explaining. They'll literally just provide text and expect the clubs to then pass that down the chain. And I said recently about, especially when VAR was coming in, how great would it have been for clubs, fans, players, managers, if in a friendly game, they'd linked up a referee and a VAR team by audio so that you could see the amount of level of discussion that's taking place, so you can understand the full process, the constant communication, how they're coming to decisions. In a friendly game, that would have done no harm. It would have been a great education piece. I still think it'd be a great education piece for them to do. But nobody's thinking about that at the SFA. Everything's just passed down the chain, and then it's just about money. They're not interested in and educating clubs.
The SFA aren't interested in educating anybody. They love it the way it is. They are such a closed organisation. I'm tired of beating my head against a brick wall. They will never, ever come out and be open about anything. But it'll take a slight issue, James, about the pre-season. In the old days, certainly, and days in my time, all the Premier teams were invited to a meeting at Hampden to talk about what was going to be the emphasis and the changes for the season coming. But haven't been involved in a few of them, hardly anybody showed up. So a lot of the time, you know, they'd be grumping and griping, we don't know what refs are doing, nobody tells us anything. But again, you know, we were told to keep as quiet as everybody. But you could quite easily say, well, there was 12 of you invited and only 3 showed up. So the invite was there. I don't know if they still do that, but that's certainly what they used to be available, but only to the Premier teams.
Charlie, you want to come in?
I picked up a word there, a change. So obviously it was released in the media that Crawford Allen's stepping down as head of the referee. And I don't know if he already has or if he is stepping down at the end of the season. But what as ex-referees and guys that do a referee podcast, what would you look for in the next head of refereeing coming in? Or is there a specific person you'd like to see get it? Or just what would you like to see from that next person?
Can I start that before you get it from the two? I want someone to come and bring something to the table. I don't want the status quo. I don't think the status quo is acceptable to football fans in Scotland any longer. It needs to end any kind of Powles Act or who's next in line. I think they need to bring somebody in that's going to bring some experience to the table and want to change it, enhance the performance, enhance the training for referees, really pass down strict guidelines to how things like VAR are going to be used rather than leaving things open and where each game is different. I'd like to see somebody that's got a clear plan and bringing something new and dynamic to the table.
Pretty much. Somebody who is perfectly willing to take on the establishment. And I like Crawford, but I don't think that he was able to take on the powers that be. And it's those guys, apart from anything else, that you need to take on. So the next person, again, if we're going to evoke any change at all, it needs to be somebody who's willing to take them on.
I mean, on that point, James, you maybe kind of touched on that a wee bit, and we can maybe name names that maybe you guys can't kind of mention, but you also remember Andrew Dallas refereeing in the juniors at the time. I remember him refereeing, and we were both warning the other guys who did the podcast with, like, be warned, like, this, you're in for a horror show when he goes up the links, because I knew it was going to happen, you know, because of the name, it's going to happen. So the issue's going to be at the SFA. I would imagine that most of these guys that are in the top positions used to be in the, I don't know, referee mafia, if you want to call it. And it's going to just be the same guys that are getting the jobs. So you can almost...
It's not a referee mafia, John. It's an SFA mafia. And that's the, I mean, that's the thing. James mentioned their status quo, and it's an interesting concept about the status quo. Of course, they're happy to change the status quo when it suits the SFA. I mean, look at VAR. No fan that I knew really was that desperate for VAR to come in and into Scottish football. And I know it was an SPFL kind of thing as well. But I think that they're very happy to keep the status quo when it suits them, and happy to make changes in other circumstances. Just because you're mentioning Andrew Dallas there, John, I'd like to get the guys' kind of take on the fast tracking, and actually, I mean, our listeners will be aware, and we're all aware of what the concept of fast tracking means, but within the context of refereeing, what does fast tracking mean within the context of refereeing?
It's just getting I'm probably caught between a hard place here, because I was fast tracked through it. So I'm not going to. I know it does explain a lot. It does explain a lot, because I was fit and I was going through it. And I had a couple of comments made to me, and Steve was there at a couple of times when we'd done fitness tests, etc. But fast track just means that they've identified people who they think they can coach, and they can influence how they want them to behave as referees. Now, the person you were talking about before, let's be honest, he could have been driving up there on a scooter, and he would still have got there. Andrew's a nice guy. I like Andrew. I like him a lot. He said he's issues with his injuries over the last few years, and that's why he's now became a VAR. But outside of that, yes, there've been too many people have been put above their capabilities to be in the position that they were in. And I would include myself in that as well. So I'm not slagging MD. I'm taking that hit for myself.
Josh, I want to just point out the two of the best refereeing performances that we've seen this year are from guys that have been taking some of their first games in the Scottish Premiership. And the problem you've got is that they'll be in for a game and they'll not get another one for 12, 13 weeks, because the current crop of Cat 1s that are bottlenecking at the top, doesn't matter if they have a bad game, they'll just get another good game. You know, they're not getting another big game the next week. There used to be back in the day, you would, you know, if you did something really wrong, you'd be sent, you're going to the Championship, you know, you're getting sent down to Queen of the South, you're going down to Dumfries, or you're going up north for a fixture this weekend, and you'd have a good hard think about that, and you wouldn't make the same mistake again. But when you've got that situation where you consistently rewarding poor performance, and you've got promising guys coming through, not getting through because there's no room to get through, because those that are performing badly are not going elsewhere, that's a really bad situation to be in. We talk about getting a new head of refereeing coming in. That new head of refereeing has to come in and identify that that's an issue, because we've got some really good talent coming through. We've seen some great performances from some of these younger cat ones that have come through. We spoke a couple of weeks ago, Des, didn't we? One at Kilmarnock called the penalty himself, didn't need VAR. Ross Hardy. Yeah, absolutely brilliant performance. And there's a couple that we've seen, and that's a sad, sad state of affairs when we've got promising talent come through. And they'll be getting frustrated and thinking about what they're going to do because they feel they can't get, they're not getting there either. So, yeah, new head of refereeing has to come in, rip it up, and find a correct development performance plan. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Steve, I'm going to jump in here, right? And I'm sure you'll agree with me. So, if we are looking for a new head of refereeing, somebody who's got a set of balls about them, somebody who's willing to rip up the structure, get rid of the committee scene behind it, somebody who's got a bit of character about them and experience as an ex-Category 1 in FIFA referee, who would you like to see as the head of refereeing in Scotland? And there's one candidate, and we both know who it is, but they will never, never appoint him.
No. Same one that we discussed a lot.
Yeah. The best guy...
That's because he's got the balls.
Yeah.
And he will not be invited.
No. And he's not applied for it. And he's now working for the MLS and match officiating observer for them. And he is the best guy to get it. But they will never, never look for him.
Not in a million years.
They're too scared of him.
Yep.
I'm just asking, who is it, sorry?
I can just give an opinion. Who do I think, out of the people that we would have available, the best person in my mind would be Craig Thompson?
I always define Craig Thompson to be a good referee.
You're pushing it there.
I wouldn't say I'm one of these rabid kind of frothing at the mouth old Fern fans, and I always did find Craig Thompson to be a fairly decent referee, one of the better referees in his time. But that's no bearing on whether or not I've got any. I wouldn't be able to judge, and we as football fans, I suppose, we wouldn't be able to judge whether or not that would be a good installation for the head of refereeing. But Craig Thompson would be your man, Steve.
Yeah, if we're going to go for somebody internally, and somebody that we think would be able to shake things up, that's who I would go for. Won't happen though.
I've got this horrible sinking feeling, right, that they're going to want to try and do something different, and they'll probably look to the continent for a former top category, a FIFA referee that's probably refereed in Champions League games, etc., that's maybe semi-retired or something. But then that can come with its own problems as well. We've seen that those can come in with wrong problems, because there's just a cultural difference there in the way that people speak to each other. And if he really wants to push change and you then face an opposition, it just becomes really messy. I'd rather it be somebody like Craig, you know, that has been there, done it, knows what he's dealing with. He wouldn't be entering the lines then blindsided. He would know what he would be walking into. I don't think he'd fear the fight either. So it's a very difficult decision for Mr. Maxwell to make. That's his decision at the end of the day. I said I don't want the status quo, but I think there is some decent people that are around the world that can make a real change, and I'd rather it be somebody that knew what they were walking into.
The other thing that I kind of find interesting, I might be wrong here, so you guys will know better, but it generally tends to be from the outside that it's mainly central belt referees in Scotland. Would that be fair to say?
Probably, but again, I suppose that's where your major population is. I don't think, off Ed, I can't think of anybody out with the central belt, certainly just now, and that's no slight on anybody who is coming to the the four. I can't think of anybody in particular. Doesn't mean that there isn't, but I think the central belt thing is just that's where most people are.
On a kind of similar thread to that, guys, and sorry to go off piste a wee bit here, John, but on a similar kind of thread to that, guys, our podcast does a lot of shows, and Charlie's heavily involved in it, to do with women's football. And I'm actually quite interested to get your thoughts on how far away you think we are from having a female referee in the top flight. I mean, there might have been one. I know there's been assistant referees in the past, but to my memory, I don't think I've ever seen one referee in an actual game. Are we a million miles away for that? Or, you know, is it closer than we think? Or
I've got no issue with whether it's a male referee or a female referee. Nobody at all. If you're the best person for that job on that particular game, then you deserve it. So, going forward, if it's a Celtic Rangers game, Barcelona or Real Madrid, and if it's a female referee, yeah, no problem at all. If that's the best person for that job at that moment in time, then go and do it. I would like to think that more females would become more involved. So
I think with the women's game growing so big in the country, I think it's only a matter of time. I think it's still going to be a few years off. But I think the focus is suddenly going to come on the association as well to bring in the diversity model that it brings in females into the men's game. So I don't think it's way into the future. I think it'll be the short-term future that will happen. And I think it's great, the popularity in the women's game. The product, especially the Scottish women's premiers, been brilliant in the last couple of years as well. It's really, really, it's developing its own crowd and fan base. And I think that those players, as they retire, will want to stay in the game, and refereeing might be the course for them. So I'd like to see it one day, and I hope it does happen. And I hope that it just becomes a norm as well, that we'll have five or six of them within the 10 cat one sitting at one point. So it just becomes the norm that your referee turns up. It doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman. Because as long as they know the laws of the game and the bringing personality, that's all that matters.
The reason I raise the question, guys, is just I mean, obviously within the context of the kind of spotlight that our podcast tries to shine on women's football and the game being kind of gender accessible and all that sort of thing. But, as we talked about off air, John and I, passionately follow junior football, and I know firsthand the sheer level of abuse rampant sexist abuse that women linesmen and women referees get at junior football. I can't even imagine what it would be like if some female referee gave Rangers a penalty at Celtic Park on the last day of the season or something like that. I'm just that's the kind of reason I'm speculating there, but that's an interesting thought. Just on the issue of game management, another thing I wanted to ask yourself, Des, is around kind of flare points in games, in terms of when you're getting a situation, maybe when you get, I don't know, 10 or 12 players or handbags, around each other, and it's all arms raised and all that. How do you manage that?
Dead easy, Josh. Have you actually seen a meaningful punch thrown in a melee?
And no in Scotland, but like Uruguayan games, South American games, and all that. But fair enough.
Go to Paraguay. Go to. Honestly, it's like I don't know. It's just like a fight outside a chippy on a Saturday night.
Actually, do you know something? Actually, I have I actually have seen, and it was at an Irvine Meadow game. And John, I need to tell you this story, but it actually ended up a proper Barney at an Irvine Meadow game once, and it was an absolute belter.
Was Martin involved?
No, actually, it was, how long? It must have been about 10 years ago. But our left back ended up getting into a proper boxing match with the opposite assistant manager. Can't remember what team it was we were playing. It might have been Cumnock. But John, aye, that's you getting your getting your wee kick in.
But, see, I remember the big one that could have stood out for me in the West of Scotland or the juniors at the time. And James, you were talking about a referee that had refereed in the Premiership this season, Callum Scott. After the incident with Canvas Line, I don't know if you remember that incident, but how he wanted to continue refereeing on after that, I don't know. So if you remember, James, you remember it?
It's not ringing a bell, but to be fair...
I remember it, John. This is the one where he gets stabbed by a set of keys or something like that, wasn't it?
Aye, the manager at the time, and then I think the manager then ended up doing a runner. There was a few controversies at
Canvas
Line.
I think we know what's going on behind the scenes at Canby.
maybe we should edit that bit out for the sake of you and me, Josh.
You've given me free rein in this pod for nearly about 3 years now, John, to promote the Los Polos Hermanos theory with Darvo FC, right? And now you're getting at me about Canby.
Well, to be fair, it's been brought up, but I will just get both ourselves into the border. In terms of referees, though, that are kind of standing out just now, who do you guys think are standing out? Because something that one of the guys brought up is we're at a situation just now whereby Scottish national team are getting to tournaments, but sadly, Scottish referees aren't getting picked.
I think that's a really poor reflection, isn't it? How poor a reflection that is that none of our top officials are getting looked in for a major tournament. That's a really, really sad state of affairs when we've got to that point where you've got major tournaments and none of your referees are going. And I think if you're going to be completely honest, does any of them deserve to go? I don't. Just my view, I don't think any of them are good enough to go in the international stage. In fact, the last few that have gone on the international stage have ended up causing massive controversy. I don't want to name names, but you'll know the ones I'm talking about. I'd rather they stay home.
A sorry state of affairs, but I suppose it just comes down to, as you say, the kind of general kind of standard of the referees just now. But is it potentially maybe even harder to referee now than what it was in the days that Des and Steve were refereeing because of VAR and the fact that we are getting that budget version of our, whereby you'll get the bigger leagues and...
Yeah, absolutely. So I've spoken to Des and Steve at length on this, and referees these days are being scrutinised as we speak, right? As we speak, there are people tweeting about something a referee's done in a game on Saturday and it's Monday night. And that will continue on the rest of the week. That never happened in their day. Social media, fan media, football forums, everything's grown to the point where a referee's every decision is scrutinised. Your football panels on a Saturday night, who will tear them apart? It will be discussed through Clyde Super Scoreboard for the full week. And that never used to go to that extent and level. So social media's got a lot of play in that, and the way that media's changed in general has got a lot of play in that, and they've got important parts to play in it as well. Because people find this hard to believe, but referees do it because they enjoy being involved in the game. As I said before, these guys are lawyers, doctors, head teachers. They're not doing that for the money. They're not going out the weekend for just the money. They don't need the money. They're going out and they do it because they enjoy it. It's a passion of theirs. They never got to make it in the game playing football, for example, but it's their way of being involved. But it should end when the 90 minutes end. But everything has become hyperbole. Everything spills over and discussed in a week, and they are under an immense amount of pressure You've seen how recently and what happened with Don Roberts and John Beaton, and what happens when a club goes publicly with something on them. They're on the head, they're on the front page and the back page for the whole week. For the whole week, their life is in the front page and the back page of a paper. That's quite unfair on them. They're just out there doing their job on the day.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen in the past, like, referees' addresses getting shared and where they work and all that type of thing, and they're thinking, like, the guys are just doing a job. Like, much as it you get caught up in the tension and all that type of thing. Players make mistakes, referees make mistakes. It's what happens, isn't it? We're all human.
Exactly.
Yeah. What I would say is, if you look at a game of football every week, players make more mistakes than referees, right? Do they get slaughtered for it? So you can look at a misplaced pass or a missed shot. That's just glossed over. If a referee makes an error, it's far less errors a referee will make than a player makes. And as James correctly said, most of the guys have got very, very well-paid jobs. They do it for the love of the game. We're doing it because we love football. We weren't good enough to play. Absolutely fine. A lot of guys, actually, I mean, Don Robertson's a fantastic football player. And his brother was professional with Partick Thistle as well. These guys just love football. We just, our love of football has taken us in another direction. So we're making decisions not biased, not through tinted glasses. We just see the decision at that moment in time and we're giving up. People think you just turn up on a Saturday and you're getting paid your X amount of money. Absolutely not. You're going to your training, you're going to your association meetings, you're going to your SFA fitness tests. It's almost like a part-time job as well. So I have got no issue with the money that these guys get per game, because I tell you what, if you actually break it down, it's probably less than you would expect.
I know Charlie's got a question, but I very quickly want to ask something on the back of that. See, in terms of the standard refereeing just now, the assistant referees do enough to help the referee, or does it come down to the relationship the referee has with the assistants, in terms of the referee might say, look, I want to officiate this way, so just leave the decisions to me and you just do your old style linesman job?
No, that's gone. No, that's entirely gone. That's going back to the late 80s, early 90s. No. The refereeing team, when they turn up, in particular when I turned up and Steve would go, you're involved entirely in the decision-making process within the game. Now, we're all mic'd up. So even before the assistant referee puts that flag up, he's telling me in my ear, there's offside, Sittman, Aberdeen, whoever it may be. He's actually telling me. So by the time I actually blow my whistle, I already know what's coming. Entirely not. It's a very cohesive team as well. And also with the fourth official. When the fourth official, and Steve and I worked together numerous times, when that ball's coming towards me or towards Steve or whatever, the fourth official takes control of that pitch probably 20 yards either side of the halfway line, because the referee's looking in. And all he's seen is the back of players. No, it's a cohesive unit. It's an absolute joined-in team. And if one person gets it wrong, you'll get it wrong. If one person gets it right, you'll get it right.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I spoke earlier and said, how good would it be if the SFA before VAR came in and done an exhibition piece and shown you how the communications that happen? And just to further add on to that point is, our referee's got his two ARs in his ear. He's got the fourth official in his ear, and he now has VAR in his ear. Now he's got four-way. He's got all that conversation going on in his ear while he's communicating with them. Plus, he's got eyes on the park. So, when particular things are happening, the human brain can only take in so much information at once. And every so often, they will have to digest everything coming through their ear and their eyes to make a decision. And I appreciate that sometimes for fans that can look really frustrating as to why is he not blowing for that right away. Well, he's getting the feedback and the information from the other eyes that are on the park and there to help him. And he's got to look with his own. So that can be that's extremely challenging to have that level of information thrown you once, and that's not appreciated because fans don't consider that all that's going on in his ear at that time as well, what he's looking at. And I really would encourage the SFA to do something like that for fans. I think they need to do more things like that for fans. The SFA, for me, that's how you buy goodwill. Give fans an education as to how the whole thing works, and you create understanding. Simple as that.
Charlie?
I've got a couple of questions, but I'll ask my first one, then I'll ask my second one. So the first question came from one of our listeners, Stephen, and he was wanting to know what your guys' thoughts on, I don't know if you've seen the Nottingham Forest statement the other week complaining about the VAR official being a Luton fan. So what, like, I don't know if that's true or not, but what was your guys' take as Des as a referee and James as a passionate fan? What was your take on that statement from Nottingham Forest?
Charlie, I thought it was embarrassing. I thought it was unbefitting to a club but not Forest history to go down that route. I kind of thought when they took Clattenburg on as an advisor that something like that was going to come one day anyway. That's been a perfect opportunity. Don't like to see it. I think too often clubs do things in the press and the media, but it's a gentleman's game and you have private conversations. I don't see the benefit of going to the media other than to pressure to get your way. I just think they went about it all wrong, especially to go down the finger-pointing of bias things not proven. The evidence, so the burden of evidence is now on Nottingham Forest to back up that statement, and they're going to find it very, very difficult to do that. So they're going to land themselves in hot water. Because effectively what they've done is bring the game into disrepute. So they'll be hit with a disrepute charge because they won't be able to prove what they've now flung out there. And that's a dangerous territory they've entered. And that's why you have disrepute laws in the game. It's to protect the fact that it is a gentleman's game and you behave in a certain way. And there's things you don't do. That was stepping over the line for me.
Yeah, well, I would agree with James entirely. I don't understand why Mark Clattenburg has taken that role other than financial gain. That's why he's went there, let's be honest. And for Nottingham Forest to put out a statement from that, it can only have come from Mark Clattenburg because he's the professional who knows the laws of the game. And I can guarantee you one thing, not one referee within England or potentially around the world will speak to Martin Clattenburg again because he's just went against his own. I think it was absolutely shocking. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing for a club of that stature and it's embarrassing for a referee of that stature. Somebody who's refereed the Euro final, the Champions League final. No, I just think that's a bit crass. I've got to say, I've lost a lot of respect for Mark Clattenburg for that. Never mind him doing that. Bloody gladiator referee.
Yeah. Do you know the strange thing is, two out of the three incidents they flagged, two of them were subjective. So all he's done is add his opinion to what he would have given. Two of the three were subjective calls for the penalty. They weren't stonewall cast iron penalties. That's what made it even more weird because that's almost like you've got one legitimate argument, but you've then tried to back up with two subjective ones, and that's just two different opinions. And that's what referees do is they look at something, you know, subjective calls, and they make their decision, and that's what they're paid to do. But for him to go against on two subjective out of the three was just bizarre, man. Honestly, that's a dangerous route we're going down.
Yeah, I think it was ridiculous. I really thought better of him. But he should have held his own counsel there.
My second question, James, it was something you mentioned actually about giving us fans more of like a insight into what goes on. And I've really enjoyed this season seeing on Twitter or on Sky TV just like the VAR audio of English games. And I remember at Christmas there was a big outcry for Rangers when they didn't he get that penalty at Celtic Park, demanding the audio being shared. Do you think that would be better for us as fans to maybe hear? And I'm not saying that incident in isolation, but...
Yeah, but like, we did this, mate, on Charlie, we did this on a podcast 2 weeks ago. We had a great discussion about this, and if anyone wants to go and listen to the full thing, brilliant, because what we effectively said is that VAR's taking so much out of the game, taking so much enjoyment, that see those awkward seven-minute pauses, fans are just expected to stand there. They don't know what's going on other than a message on the screen. We think in rugby, it's fantastic how they do it. You hear the explanation, you hear the different dialogue, you hear how the referees come to the decision. And rational people hearing that will accept the decision if they have the rationale. But if you don't give them it, it creates hysteria. The not knowing feeds noise, and the noise just builds, and it feeds the conspiracies, and it feeds ill will. If they were to get to that point where they could go into the screen and you hear the discussion that's going on between the VAR and the referee, and it keeps the fans engaged and everybody understands, brilliant, we're all for it. Will it happen? No. And you know why it won't happen? Because the SFA will always want to control those communications. We won't allow it to happen. That is sad, but that's the truth is, there's an opportunity there to put something back in the game that VAR's taken away, but it won't, because they want to control what's being said and what gets out.
Yeah, I would agree. I would be entirely happy for the referee to say, okay, St Johnstone Aberdeen, full against Aberdeen number 5, St Johnstone player holding, pulling. Do you know what? The fans are then involved. The fans understand what was given. The fans then go, all right, okay, we move on. Rather than wait 3 minutes for something to come on that's not clear and obvious, and then just say, oh, right, foul, move on. Nobody understands it. Nobody has an explanation of it. So I think we have to accommodate our audience, because then that's the lifeline of football. Football fans are the lifeline. If they don't turn up.
That's why we're at this stage nowadays, isn't it? We're at this stage now because football became about big money, and big money comes big risk for big businesses at those football clubs. And they wanted to bring in whatever they could to eliminate any mistake that went against them. They've went in a pursuit of perfection. But football, and I said this in about episode 2, football is beautiful because it is imperfect. You have things that go for you, have things that go against you. It creates discussion with your mates in the pub. It creates the talking points. It's the highs and lows in the roller coaster of football. But when you chase perfection and you take too much away from it, chasing perfection, then you're damaging the game. You're not enhancing the game. So they have to find a way to use the technology in the right way, and not to be so intrusive that it's taking so much out of the game. But that can only come from IFAB coming back to the VAR protocol and putting out very simple guidelines of when it should be used and how it should be used, and not left it open to wide interpretation for associations to come up with their own ways of using it. That shouldn't be happening. They need to find a better use of the technology. They need to find a time limitation on these VAR checks as well, because Des pointed out there, and Steve continually says this as well, if it's taking 7 minutes, it's not clear and obvious, so he shouldn't be at the screen. That's somebody in his ear who's trying to convince him of what they've seen, and that's re-refereeing a game. That shouldn't be happening. So we have to find a better way forward, because I think that football fans are getting so turned off by not being able to, you know, cheer a goal any longer. A goal scored and you stand with your mates going, Is it standing?
VAR has now come up with ways to chop off goals and chop off excitement. I don't like people. I go to St Mirren most weeks, and I'm like, oh, right. Not that we score a lot of goals, but I go and watch it, and I'm like, what's happening? That's why I prefer to go and watch junior football, because there's no VAR. There's nothing there. It's just an opinion. If you get it right, you get it right. If you get it wrong, you get it wrong. Who cares? It's just a game of football. Now, you'd be as well playing FIFA. You'd be as well sitting in your Xbox and playing FIFA and go, oh, is it? Is it not? Is it not? So, yeah, I think VAR has been a a disaster in Scotland this year?
I think it's been a disaster more than Scotland. I think it's been disaster in every league. It's not something that's unique to us. You look at that Real Madrid-Barcelona game, where for €4 million they could have had goal line technology, and the president of La Liga said, no, we don't need goal line technology because we've got all these cameras from VAR. And they still never got it right. And it's now got Barcelona's backs up. And that, do you know what? I was secretly, privately going, great, because see if you annoy one of these big clubs, the other ones with the influence, the other ones that will suddenly want something changed to accommodate them. So maybe that's going to be a catalyst for change, because that's what's happened in the past. When there's been a big decision going against a big club in the Champions League about handball, suddenly the IFAB the following season want to look at handball because they're trying to keep the big club happy. So maybe that'll be a catalyst for something to happen with her. We can only hope. Won't be for next season, though, because IFAB's already met, already determined what laws are going to change in the summer, and we'll probably know in June what things are going to look like next year. But, yeah, something drastically has to change, because I'm sure that everybody on this call probably agrees it's taken too much away from the game we enjoy.
Laurie, you want to go in?
Yeah. Indeed, it is taking up way too much from a beautiful game. As you say, the imperfections, what we love about it. I mean, the two worst offenders are offside and, of course, handball, as you mentioned. I mean, no one really knows what handball is. They change the handball law like every summer, pretty much. I'm more than happy to say, probably with an ex referee on and a refereeing expert, I'm more than happy to bet that the handball law will change again. No one really knows. And also, as well, with the, getting the referees to communicate, whether that's, on the TV, rugby TMO style, or indeed hearing it in the PA system in a stadium would be fantastic. Because, using Rugby Park as an example, is one of the stadiums without a big screen. What basically happens in... If you've been at Rugby Park as a away supporter, you'll know. What basically happened is the Rugby Park stadium announcer basically has an iPad, which is effectively a VAR monitor. And then he'll have to basically say, VAR, checking possible penalty, handball. It's quite often, and I'm not trying to criticise Kelly's stadium announcer, Elliot Boyce here, if you'd listen to him, it's quite often where he'll accidentally miss another VAR check going on, and no one has the foggiest clue what's happening. We all assume it's a VAR check because you see the referee, finger to his ear, but no one's entirely clear sometimes what's going on. So some communication would be great, and it can be. And the infuriating thing with it is it can be done. Obviously, rugby has proven it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
The one caveat I'd like to add to that, Laurie, is that, and this would probably be more a question for TV broadcasters, but if that was to be a possibility, if it was to be introduced to football, I would like an option, like a red button option where you can have it with or without. Because, as you know, John, I don't watch rugby at all. I've got no interest in it whatsoever, but the few unfortunate times where I've maybe been in a pub and it's been on in the background and the noise of it's been going on, if that was in football, it would just annoy me to listen to it. It would be interesting maybe to listen to it like for one or two games, but I would not like to watch it and listen to it for the whole kind of 90 minutes of a game. So, maybe that's a plea out to TNT and Sky and all that for just a wee bit of a caveat.
Just imagine you're watching American football, then, Josh.
Mate, if you're Scottish and you're watching American football, you've got a lot bigger problems than VAR.
Do you mind, guys, if we just pick up on what Laurie was saying about offside and handball?
James, you're becoming fucking more of a referee than me.
I know, it's because I've spent too much time with a pair of yours. On handball never needed fixed. Let's be honest. That came, as I said before, normally a big decision goes against a big club in the Champions League. Suddenly they want to look at some. Handball was a prime example of that. That IFAB changed the law on handball was to appease one club because a big decision didn't go their way. Handball should be as Des and Steve always say, it should be intentional or it's got to be justified. If not, it's handball. Straight, black and white, intentional, non-intentional, ball to hand, hand to ball. As for the offside, they are trialling what they call the Wenger method at the moment. So IFAB have got that in trial at the moment. So that's Arsene Wenger come up with the idea whereby rather than being offside by a toe, you would have to have daylight between you. So if any part of you is past the defender and any part of you is still inside, you're onside. Now, I know that the margins are still there. That's no different from offside at the moment, but it's very difficult for an attacker to stay onside if he's having to leave part of himself with the defender rather than all of himself. So hopefully that will remove, if that comes in as law and into force, hopefully we will then see a lot of these marginal things disappearing. Because see, at the moment, what we see about these big thick lines where it's drawn over people's toes, that's a nonsense. I was reading an essay recently. It was by a professor down south, and they were talking about camera rates and refresh rates. And they said the camera rates and refresh rates that are currently being used for VAR are not fit for purpose. They're not capable. That technology is not capable of capturing that image correctly. So she had blown apart the point as to where marginal calls could actually be made by the technology they currently have. What does that say? If that's not definitive, then why is that even in? Why does that even exist? So hopefully, yeah, the Wenger message is worth trying. I'm open to trying anything offside. I think that's deeply frustrating how many goals we lose to VAR reviews looking for offside these days, and it is toes, and the lines never look straight, do they? They're always wonky. They always tell you, oh, we don't go with a cut of the grass. Yeah, but yeah, it's got to be close, isn't it? Can't be that far off. You've put that lane across diagonally. Surely the guy who's cut the grass isn't that bad.
There was an Aberdeen incident recently against Livingston.
Oh, you're going to start me on that one?
We've got some other questions from other listeners. But Laurie, what would you want to bring up there?
Yeah, so just a couple of things. First of all, for the listeners, sorry if I dropped out for a wee second there, a little techie issue, so apologies about that first and foremost. But just as James made the point about cameras, is it like bog standard like 1080p HD cameras we're still using for this, or is it like fancier stuff? But obviously it's not up to scratch. If you look at what we're using compared to say the EPL in England, their stuff definitely does look a lot sharper, even if you're just watching on the telly.
So I think there is a misconception there's four cameras. I believe that the minimum you've got to have is 8 to operate VAR. But in England, you get some like 16 or 32 cameras and you go overhead and you get 360. So a VAR looking at something can get a full picture of absolutely everything. We don't. We get one for the touchline, one for this stand up here, looking at an offside at a diagonal angle, looking down there while a line getting drawn there. See, as a consumer, that's dreadful. Absolutely dreadful, expecting people to look at it and make a judgment call for themselves. As for the technology, I know that the cameras have to be calibrated. It was touched upon that Aberdeen Livingston incident. We spoke at length on that. That's an absolute disgrace. That on-field decision was changed by a guess when Hawkeye wasn't working. That should never, ever happen. Unless there was factual evidence there of offside, they should not have called the referee to look at that. And Aberdeen didn't want to take that further, and I respect them that they don't tend to want to make things public and take things further. That's their way. But that call and that use of VAR at that time was completely wrong and should never happen again.
I've got some questions
I'm just saying the Livingston Aberdeen game. That offside call was absolutely ridiculous. It's a guess, and they're saying it's an educated guess. An educated guess is still a guess, so that's wrong, and that's been detrimental to Livingston in the current position that they're in as well. You can't have that happen. That's entirely wrong.
Because I think your microphone's got something wrong with it. I know it's dropped a few times, but it's now crackling.
Right, we'll move on. We'll kind of get some questions from the listeners and that. So, once we Chris, what do you think of the accusations of bias elsewhere? In Turkey, losing foreign refs on VAR in big games, which is particularly interesting, obviously, because Hugh Dallas is the consultant over there.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts on that?
That was a last measure for him because he brought in an airline specialist in communications to try and help the communication between VAR and the officials. He actually asked for help. He actually asked for help from the SFA, which is a good laugh in itself. As if we know any better. I don't see that pathing down foreign referees in games. When you, see if you want to try and get people to referee in this country, imagine trying to recruit referees saying we'll recruit you, but you'll never ever referee the biggest game in the country. You'll never get referees to want to apply. What is a referee's dream if they join? They want to referee a cup final between a Hearts and a Hibs or a Rangers and Celtic. If you suddenly say, no, we're leaving those to the foreign referees, you're never going to recruit referees in this country. It's not a path. I think that that's a really desperate measure to go down that path. I think it's a short-term fix as well. I just don't think it works. We ended up with it after a referee strike in the past, and we went through a few games with a few foreign referees. I think people just got to the point where they're like, they're no any better.
No, you can. If we give up the Old Firm game to foreign referees, English referees, then the game's gone. We can't have that. Absolutely not. And what does it actually say if the SFA bring that? What does it say to your current referees? We don't think you're good enough. You've got to support them. You've got to educate them. You've got to train them. You've got to make them the best that they can. And if you then go, well, do you know what? I'm bringing in a team from Spain, a team from Italy, a team from France. That's totally undermining what these guys have been striving for all their training, all their career. They want to be in the biggest games. They want to be in Scottish Cup finals. They want to do Old Firm games. They want to do Edinburgh derbies. It's totally undermining them. So, no, I would never like to see foreign referees come in and take over our prestige games.
I think the biggest problem with that is there's certain fans that have conspiracy theories that think that if you have foreign referees in, don't know, be biased towards certain teams, but that's Old Firm fans primarily. How can I say that? Some other questions.
Let's not pretend it's only Old Firm fans that are abusive and biased and everything. Because let me not remind you of Aberdeen fans here, John.
The West of Scotland Referee Association. Yeah, I've heard this line.
and Hibs fans, Charlie, and Kilmarnock fans, Laurie. You know, I do think, I mean, because Old Firm fans are more numerous, their voice is louder, right? But I don't think, I do not believe for one second there is any particular kind of more intensity of the accusation of bias or unfairness with any one particular club. I think obviously Celtic Rangers get more prominence because they've got more fans and they're covered more extensively by every media outlet. But I mean, Aberdeen fans are horrible to referees. And they're horrible in general, but I mean, horrible abuse to some of the referees. Just absolutely shocked, particularly in games against Rangers where, you know, maybe Rangers have been awarded a penalty or something, and it is a penalty.
Are you sure?
I would like to retaliate to your point, Josh, a wee bit. But I think there's not retaliate in a negative sense, more just a discussion one. I think there has been times where I've seen Rangers and Celtic, including both in this, get penalties that I don't think at the other end of the park it would be a penalty. And I'm not blaming the referees for bias at all, but I just think, I feel like sometimes, I've seen at Easter Road earlier this season where Kyogo got a penalty at the last minute. Joniel, reckless tackle, probably has a penalty. But it might be my Hibs blinker glasses on, but I don't think at the other end Hibs get that penalty.
Is that Nick Walsh on VAR? It was the one where Nick Walsh was called the VAR to look at it. It was just the challenge began at the D and it ends up in the box right at the end. Yeah.
And that might be, I don't know, it might be predisposed bias that I've got without realising it. But there's been plenty of decisions that I've seen other clubs get against Hibs that I believe at the other end of the park we don't get them.
There's probably an element of seeing it through your own team's lenses, but I do also think that there is something in that there is some, particularly when you're out, or in your case when you're away at Ibrox or Celtic Park, there is something in, and it's hard to say. I do think the referees always call it as they see it. I mean, they do always call it as they see it, and then that's, you know, an absolute given. But I do think there is something about the crowd's go to play. Well, I mean, you could tell us, Des, does the crowd no influence your decision, but does the crowd have an effect on the way you're able to manage a game and make decisions?
to be fair, Josh, no. No, well, right. That's me. I can't obviously talk for other referees. I would like to think that I've got a strong enough character and strong enough personality. See, when the game kicks off, I don't see Team A or Aberdeen versus St Johnstone, right? Just call it that. I just see red versus blue. I see an incident and you call it as that. See, the crowd, I've had numerous shouts from the crowd non-stop, but you've got to have your professionalism and you just call it as you see it. And that's the way I've always carried out my career when I was refereeing. If it's a foul, it's a foul, and if it's to Team Blue, Team Red, whatever, then that's it. You're so engrossed in the game, you don't actually have time to consider the other factors. You just see that moment in that split of a second. So, yeah, no, I've never been influenced by a crowd.
I've got some other questions. So John, the other John that does the podcast, has asked if, do you think the challenge system would work well with VAR in terms of having, say, for example, two per team per half or something like that? Would it help in terms of... meaning that referees or does not re-referee in the decisions?
I spoke about this in yesterday's podcast. I don't like the idea at all. I appreciate it works in other sports, but it's very American for me. I just don't like it. Imagine getting through a part of a game and the referee's flinging his flag and they're going to go to a review and what the manager's called there. I don't think that's a route you want to go down. I think we're in serious danger already of changing the game beyond what... its founders made it. I think that we're in danger of trying to change things too much, that we've taken too much away from it. It's not something I'd like to see come in. I think when we spoke about it, Des, you weren't a fan of it either.
No, you can't sanitise the game. It's a contact sport, it's a physical sport, it's dynamic. You go through it. If you're going to challenge a referee, what's the ultimate gain from that? There's no ultimate gain from it. So no, I wouldn't like to see that. It's a game of skill, it's a game of error on players' behalves, on managers' behalves, on referees' behalves. So just get on with it. I wouldn't change it at all.
Aye, it's something that's very different in American football because it's naturally a stop start game, so it's a bit easier to do a challenge because you do it after every what's it called again? First sit down, every down. That's what it is. Laurie.
Yeah, it was just to come in on the challenges thing. I mean, in the past, I've kind of been in favour of it because it sounds like a good idea. But, like, I just think, yes, it will stop the game and all that. And another thing that I think about it now is the amount of, like, I mean, I use the word the SFA like to use about appeals, the amount of frivolous challenges you would get, the amount of, you know, times where teams, despite the limit in terms of number of challenges, that at least to begin with would just chance their arm and challenge for absolutely anything. I know it's not of any, I know it's very much short term thinking. I suppose in a way that's what the challenge system is. Really, it's just short term thinking, and as you say, there's no real long term gain to having such a system in place.
Yeah, well, I would say right now, the most frivolous appeal at this moment in time, in my opinion, is the Motherwell challenge for the red card yesterday, sorry, on Saturday, for Jack Vale. I'd be amazed if the SFA overturned that. But if you're going to do that three times per half or three times per game, how long are you going to... We're already moaning about VAR, how long time VAR takes to make a decision. Can you imagine if we have challenges on it? How long is a game going to last? I mean, you're going to be turning up a game at 2:45 and you'll be leaving there at 10:08.
Yeah, it'll be a nightmare.
Can I ask a question if that's all right, John?
Aye, of course.
Could I put it to Charlie, right? Just as an example, Charlie, Marcondes, one of your guys, scored a wonderful free kick in, say, the 6 minutes of the weekend, right?
One of absolute. It's mental that it's not being nominated for goal of the season.
He's knuckleballed it in the top bin, right? Absolutely stunning, stunning free kick. What is he's all of 30 yards out, isn't he? But see everything in the media since Monday, it's all about that sending off, right? It's all about a refereeing decision. We as a football support and fan base and media have become obsessed about talking about the most controversial refereeing decision rather than talking about great goals. We don't talk about great goals anymore. We've become talking about what has John Beaton done? What's Don Robertson done? Why is he no sent him off? Chris Sutton says this. Chris Boyd says that. Michael Stewart says this. It's just like, can we just get back in some normality to actually speaking about the talent that we see a weekend? Because that was a wonderful goal. That should have been talked about. We try to do it as part of our podcast and have a moment a week and then retweet whatever the SPFL put up the highlight of that goal and say that's what we picked as our moment of the week, because we do try to encourage the fact is we have to remember and celebrate the fact that we're there to watch these things. That's what we go to watch football for. We go to watch magical moments from talented players, and we have lost our way. We've really lost our way and getting caught up because VAR's come in, especially, and talking about the beautiful game.
No, I totally agree.
Unfortunately, a lot of people are too happy to focus on the negatives as opposed to the positives in our game. Question from Laurie's colleague on the Kelly View podcast. So he's saying he's still on the fence with VAR. Kilmarnock seems to have had a lot go against them. All for VAR staying, but if you had to sell it to me to stay in Scotland, what one change would you like to see to it?
Des, you want to go first?
What one change would I like to see for VAR? I'd like to see competent people operating it. I think
you've got us in trouble, Des. It's usually us things like that.
I know. I'm going to get
by the honesty.
Yes. No. I would say, as long as you've got technology and humans working with it, you're going to get errors, right? But I genuinely believe that the education provided for the operation of VAR hasn't been good enough. I don't think it has been good enough. And I think probably the most critical moment of the year was the Livingston-Aberdeen game when VAR overruled an on-field decision. To me, that encapsulates the whole thing that's wrong about it. That a VAR decision on somebody's guess rules a decision over the on-field referee. That to me is entirely entirely wrong. So, do you know what? Let's, as I've said to you, football's a game of skill and error. Football players have got fantastic ability. Yes, they make errors. The top referees have fantastic ability. Yes, they make errors. Leave it to that. VAR should only be there for factual evidence, not subjective evidence, because that subjective evidence could be different from what the on-field referee says at the time. But I'm sorry, if you are VAR, you're not the referee. Leave it to the referee.
My answer to the question as well would be to bring in that audio piece of the reviews, because yep. See, if I think that there is like a leading of the witness type thing happening, where there is that more experienced referee on VAR trying to steer and guide someone towards opinion, they'll no do it if everybody's hearing it. It'll cut that out, and selfishly, that's why I want a part of that. I want it'd make it pure. It'd get everything out in the open. It'd stop a lot of conspiracy theories. It'd engage fans. That would be it for me, is let us hear the audio discussion as to what's going on in VAR, how they're getting to that decision.
Right, here's another one that I've said for past couple of years when we're involved in a previous podcast. So clubs at this moment in time are paying for VAR. They're the ones that are footing the bill. What is the most controversial thing in football in Scotland? It's VAR. Why not get a sponsor for it? Do you not think, and I'll use Arnold Clark as an example, when that board goes up, everybody sees it around the whole world. Put the money back into the clubs. Put the money back in where they can buy players, they can pay wages, they can enhance themselves. Why is VR, the screen or the big TV, why is that not sponsored? It's probably the most obvious thing in the world, because everybody's going to look at it and let the clubs keep their money.
But that comes down to, again, about the people that are running our association and running our leagues are not exploring every avenue to generate money for the clubs. We're really bad at selling our game.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I would guarantee you that somebody would pay quite a lot of money for their... I mean, Laurie's obviously a Kilmarnock fan. Does Laurie want £100,000 coming out of Kilmarnock's budget every year when somebody could potentially sponsor it? That could potentially be a couple of players for them.
Absolutely. And you're spot on. I don't know if I speak for everyone else on here, but I'd never actually thought of that, about actually sponsoring VAR. But then if you think about it, the referees get sponsored rather ironically by Specsavers. So what? I'm not saying it has to be them, but as you say, why doesn't VAR get sponsored by a company? And as you say, it could, you know, save a club with a smaller budget like Kilmarnock's. You know, £100,000, as you say, can go a long way. But for us, or for, you know, even Dundee United as they come up, you know, from the Championship next season, you know, it does mean a lot to clubs. So sponsoring VAR is a good shout. I've never thought of that. That's a good point.
Remember the difficulty we had, though, trying to get a sponsor for the league due to the COVID run game. Another question, this is primarily for you, Des. Is the refereeing job becoming more difficult? And if so, is it down to the constant changing, updating of guidance on how the laws should be interpreted?
I think it's becoming more difficult because it's under more scrutiny because of social media. Because every fan with a mobile phone has access to make a comment. But the actual game itself, no. I don't think the game itself has become more difficult. I think the scrutiny of it is fan media, which also we're involved in at this moment. But no, I think that refereeing and the guys who get to the top level they're doing fine. You'll also have some who are better than others. But no, I don't think it's a more difficult job than it's ever been. The difficulty becomes just because everybody's got an opinion and everybody now can have an opinion.
Charlie, Josh, Laurie, you got any other questions? They were mostly questions that we had there.
Yeah, just one. Des, not VAR, you'd be glad to know. Was there anything when you're refereeing a game that you hated booking a player for, cautioning a player for. I'm thinking about, you know, I hate seeing a referee booking a player for taking their tap off, you know, when they're celebrating, yeah, like maybe like a last minute winner or something like that. I hate seeing it. Is there anything like, you know, you maybe like a rule or a law in the game that you thought, oh, this is a bit, but you had to do it?
I would probably agree with that. Along those lines, if a guy scores a goal the 91st minute and he's taking his top off. Now, I get it if you're playing for Manchester United and Arsenal and you take your top off and you've got a sponsor's logo on, right, and you're going to make a right few quid off it. I can understand and go, well, no, you can't do that. But football's a game of passion, isn't it? And if you've got that moment of exhilaration within yourself and going, I've just won the game for my team, I don't like that. Are there laws? No, I don't really think I can think of anything else, Josh. I probably take the top off. No, I don't know. What about you? Is there any laws that you don't like to see implied?
I think some of the ones that are a bit silly, I mean, I think things kind of similar to like Gaza booking the ref and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's obviously a legendary example, you know. But players going into the crowd as well, you know. Another one another one that I'll never forget is the one Andy Halliday got sent off for at Morton.
Oh, yeah.
If you remember it a few years ago.
Inciting a riot.
Listen, I know Andrew very well. I taught Andrew. I had a text off from earlier tonight. I was asking him about a couple of things. And I know the referee, Barry Cook, at the time, both ex-Renfrew High peoples. I think the referee there has to show a wee bit of common sense and a wee bit of personality. So, you've got to come across better sometimes, haven't you?
Was it Bobby Madden that sent off Andy Halliday that night?
No, it was Barry Cook.
Or was it Barry? Right. I remember that night because they told him the reason was inciting a riot, but I think he just put his arms up in there and that was enough to incite a riot in Greenock. So be careful, you bees are ever in Greenock, lads.
Hey, by the way, there's been a lot less incited riots in Greenock.
It's true. We'd actually talked about one a couple of weeks ago in answer to that question. It was a Livingston player. He gets substituted off and he kicked the wall. And David Martindale was going crazy.
That was at
Tynecastle. Yeah, Tynecastle, wasn't it? And Martindale's dealing with him, right? And Brian Rice, who's Martindale's assistant, also scream at him, you sit down and shut your mouth, you know, speaking back to the manager. Like, they're dealing with him. They're going to discipline him. The referees ran the full length of the park to give him a second yellow and send him off. He's already been dealt with. He's already substituted off the park. And I said to Des, I don't like to see yellow cards and things like for that because he's already off the park and his manager's already dealing with them. There's no need for the referee to sprint across and give him a second yellow and give the manager an additional headache. He probably was going to not get playing the next game anyway for his back chat to his manager. So should have just just left it at that.
Well, I'll tell you what, we done our podcast last night and you said your moment of the week was
Marcondes.
Do you know what? See, for me, my moment of the week was Livingston winning a game because Davy Martindale, who has absolutely bust his backside for Livingston all year and been so professional and so positive, I was delighted to see Livingston win. I'm not a Livingston fan, but I just thought it was good to see get him a wee bit of success.
I thought it was terribly sad when if you seen Bruce Anderson's goal, right? He's obviously leaving at the end of the season. He scored after that news is broke and he scored a nice goal. And he's went to celebrate and realised it's a completely empty stand to his left, to his right and right in front of him. There's nobody. It was like celebrating a COVID goal. You know, it was like during the COVID period with empty stands. And he thought, what a terrible situation to be in the club. Where is that going so wrong? Where nobody's turning up to watch them anymore, and they're going to go down. And you kind of really feel that a club with that size of stadium and infrastructure and a lot of expenditure, what's going to happen when they go down? Because they don't look like a kind of club that's going to bounce back up. They're going to have to, you know, severely downsize. Don't think that David Martindale is going to be around to bring them back up. He's probably going to have other offers because he's shown when he has been back the money that he can deliver. So,
on a positive for Levy, they'll save 100 grand on VAR.
Very good, Charlie.
Get a sponsor.
And I mean, David Martindale, if he is still there next season, I mean, he wants to save every last penny. So I mean, if he's saving 100 grand, he's buzzing.
Des, if I could ask you a two-parted question, that'll be my last one. So my first part is, what's your favourite game you've refereed? And the second part is, what game do you wish you refereed?
Oh, gosh. Right, so I've been involved, obviously, SPL. I've done my time there. I'm a Renfrew Juniors fan. I've grew up with junior football. I came through junior football, went to the highest level that I could. I'd probably say there's three games that are my highlights. I had the Scottish Junior Cup final in 2010, Largs Thistle against Linlithgow Rose. It was the game I grew up with. I played junior, my family played junior. I've managed in the junior football. It's just a level of football that I love, and I go and watch. So that game, I was also involved in Thierry Henry's debut for Dundee United Barcelona. I came out of Tannadice that night, and I came home and I had getting at the car, and I had stupid amounts of text messages. I got a Barcelona jersey after it as well. My wife wears it. She's hoovering the house sometimes. She's got a Barcelona strip on. And I also done, well, in fact, another two. I done John Kennedy's testimonial, Celtic Manchester United, and I also was involved in the Stylian Petrov testimonial. Celtic against that, All-Star 11, there was Jamie Redknapp, John Terry, Gabby Bonlaw, and stuff like that. But what I would say is I gave every game the same professionalism, gave every single game, every single player, manager, committee, I gave them the exact same respect they deserved, because when you turn up to a game, that's the biggest game of the day. So you've got to give them that respect. So no, I loved every 90 minutes that I was ever involved in.
The second part to that one was, what one did you actually dream that you would do? You never answered that point.
Aye, what is there a game that you've watched on TV or been in the stadium for that you wish you could arrest?
Probably the 1998 World Cup final. France, Brazil. I was there. I was 24, and I was over there with my pals. Five of us went. We had a wee drunken night in Renfrew at a pub quiz, and the next day my mate turned up at my door and said, right, you owe me 60 quid. I'm like, why do you owe you 60 quid? He's like, I've just booked your TGV. We're going to Paris. And it was just that one night, and I had the most fantastic 3 weeks of my life in France watching the 1998 World Cup final. I'd done the Brazil-Scotland game in the opening day in Paris. We then went to Bordeaux for Scotland-Norway, and then we went to Saint-Étienne for Scotland-Morocco. And through a friend of mine's, Kerry Nidsan, he'd managed to get me a couple of tickets for games. So, yeah, if I could have refereed any games, it would have been those three.
Brilliant. mean, I was just going to ask you there, Des. You mentioned your referee John Terry. Did he make sure he was in first class when he was on the way to that game?
I can tell you something off air that I can't tell you right now.
But more importantly, I hope your wife wasn't at the game.
I was phoning her, making sure she was in the house.
Aye. Right, okay. Anything else before we wrap up, guys? It's been an interesting insight, certainly. Anything else?
We've got a really random, probably quite quick one. Just a random kind of refereeing or officiating point. One thing I noticed a couple of years ago when Kelly won the championship is most of the time, unless the game's on the TV, there was no fourth official. What's it like refereeing without a fourth official at these sort of games? Because to a fan, one of the biggest jobs of a fourth official is probably dealing with a lot of the aggro from the team's benches and whatever. What's it like refereeing without one? I remember I'm quite sure there was an Ayrshire derby without a fourth official at it, and I thought that was a bit mental.
It's not really any different. I mean, when I was refereeing, and if Steve's my fourth official or I was his fourth official, I would just tell him to shut up. exactly. No, it's the fourth official's job. It's a thankless task. It is. It's a thankless task because what I used to put back to managers used to be, and I've obviously, I have good relationships with, I know Derek McInnes very well, I know Alan McCoy's very well, and most managers. And what I would say to them was, your assistant manager is giving you advice. Do you need that advice? Do you take that advice? Same with me. And I'll say on to the referee, I think the referee's the man in charge. The manager is a man in charge. You don't need to take that advice. So what I would say to the fourth official goes, I'd say to the assistant manager, I've given the referee my advice. He doesn't need to take it. So it's a thankless task. All you're doing is you're a wrestling referee, pretty much. That's it.
Right, thanks for that. James, I should say, as the man that controls the podcast, where can everyone find the podcast? What's the best way to reach out to you as well on socials, etc.?
Thank you. Predominantly, we do most of our contact through engagement through the X account, which is behind TW Pod. And you'll find us on YouTube under that same at behind TW Pod or by searching for Behind the Whistles. We record every Sunday. It's out on audios, out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, all the big audio providers. And the video episode goes up on a Sunday night, and you'll find it on there. And we'll hope that you'll come and engage with us like we've talked about. And please stay in touch, guys. Thanks so much again for having us all on. Appreciate it.
I know, we'll be keen to get you back on as well, definitely. So thank you very much, Des and James.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, guys. Stay in touch.
Pleasure.
Definitely. And happy football.